Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Real quick before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about.
I finally got a dog, and I'm so excited to introduce you all to Finn. We haven't really gotten to see him on the channel so much because we do all of our recording over at Dylan's place. But some of our patrons might recognize him from being in the background of some of the Patreon-exclusive content. But now that I finally have a dog, we can have Play to Win merch for Finn, too. So use the bonfire link in the description of the podcast to check out the Play to Finn design featuring Finn's portrait next to the Play to Win logo. And hopefully we'll get to see Finn on the channel more in the future. Thanks everyone, and let's get into today's episode.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we're talking about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about tournaments in CEDH. We recently went to one, Tyler's Convoke Tournament. What was it called?
It was called Prototype.
Prototype
Convoke Tournament that he and Brandon both put on together.
Yeah, it went great. It was really fun.
It went very well. He's not here today because he didn't play in the tournament, so he would be pretty silent throughout most of this episode, I think.
Yeah, but he said overall there was a couple hiccups in the beginning, but besides that, it all went pretty smooth. Everyone that talked to me said they were having a great time, which is really great. And a couple of hiccups, that's going to happen. It's their first tournament ever. And by hiccups, I mean like it started a half hour late, which like a lot of tournaments do. So
I've never been to a Magic tournament that started on time.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so we're going to talk quickly about our rounds, what happened to them. And then we're going to talk about just like our feelings on tournament CDH right now on the whole.
Yeah, because there's a lot of interesting things that happened during this tournament that I really want to highlight and like, I don't know, get everyone else's opinion on too.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what you guys feel about some of the stuff we'll say in the comments. So let's just jump right in. We got a first round that we're going to talk about.
Let's start with the first round. Go ahead. What do you got?
No, I think you should go first. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we should talk about the deck that we played.
Oh, good idea. We were both playing Thrasios Timna.
Exactly. Shocker. Yeah.
We were both playing Thrasios Timna. I think we found out we were about 8 cards off, and most of those cards were like, you know, I'm playing the Banishing Knack over the
Retraction Helix.
Is that what it is?
I was on Imperial Seal and Mystical Tutor.
Yeah.
And touched the Spirit Realm, whereas you had Abrupt Decay instead and like some other pieces of tech, maybe more on the board interaction.
What were the other two things that I had? I know over land, you had 2 fetch lands over Cavern of Souls and an Elvish Spirit Guide from me.
Yeah, 2 mana sources
What were the other changes?
You know what? You had more mana because Bloom Tender's in your list and not in my list.
That's what it is. I think it was Bloom Tender and one of the Artifact Rocks, maybe?
Oh, was it a rock? I feel like our rocks are identical.
Doesn't super matter. Our lists were very close.
Great minds think alike. That's why.
CDH right now is very grindy. Everyone's looking to grind a little bit. It seems Timna Thrasios, we've both decided, does that pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, take us away with your round one.
Round one. I'm looking at the 6. I kept on the play 3 lands, Esper Sentinel, Neoform, Swords to Plowshare against Blue Farm, Cody, and Magda. I thought Swords was pretty good against either Magda or Cody if it needs to be. And then the Esper Sentinel could hopefully draw me some cards, maybe keep up against Blue Farm. I draw a Demonic Consultation very early on, which means that I can Neoform my Esper into Thoracle, and I have the win. Demonic Consultation's right there. As I do this, Cody Gitaxian probes me and shows the table that I do have the win right there, okay?
Ooh, that's bad.
I know. It goes to me, and I draw Lotus Petal. So for some reason, I have been gifted the opportunity to present a turn 2 win, but my Blue Farm opponent has 1 land up, and I'm afraid. If I do this, I have nothing else going on. I get rid of my Esper Sentinel, all my hand, a simple Spell Pierce, and I'm blown out. So I don't. I say maybe I'll draw a Counterspell. I'll wait until turn 3. On turn 2, he plays the Rhystic Study. Cody taps out for Cody. Magda does a couple of Magda things, and the turn 3 comes around, the win is still available, and I just go for it. I'd say I'm just going to go for it. He has a Rhystic Study, he's tapped out, he's got to have free interaction. If he doesn't, then I win the game. If he does, then maybe I can grind a little bit. And no one had interaction, I won on turn 3 very easily. It was such a great start to the day. I'm like, oh, this is the tournament for me. This is exactly how we draw it out.
You were the first pod done too, Brandon told me. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so I was like, I was feeling very good. The Magic Gods gifted me like the perfect opportunity. They even gave me a turn 2 win that I probably probably should have went for, but I went for the turn three instead. Everyone was tapped out on turn three. That felt safer to me.
I feel like if they had interaction, they wouldn't have run out a turn two Rhystic study then, especially knowing that you had the win in hand already.
The blue farm player also started to pick up his land as I was doing stuff, and I was like, oh, that's something. It ended up being Enlightened Tutor. That's what he was doing.
Were you playing against LSV? What the fuck?
Yeah, I was like, oh, he's picking up the pen. I was like, don't blow it early. Don't blow your whole shit right now. But on turn three, when it was tapped out, you got to have free magic, counter magic at that point. It felt better.
Yeah, exactly. That's an awesome win. Yeah.
How did your first round go?
So a little hiccup with my first pod because it was a three-person pod. We were sitting there waiting for the last person to show up, but it turns out that there were two people with the same name in the same first name, and they weren't sure which person of this name had dropped, and it turned out it was the person that was in our pod. And this was just an unfortunate hiccup as to how they found out that this was the person that dropped.
Okay. And at this point, there was just no other pots to fire. You would all three get the bye at that point, which isn't really a good
thing. That's the thing. They were walking around going, hey, do you have the bye? Do you want to play in this game? And then, but there was no one that was there to play in our pod. So it ended up being a Tim DeCrown player going first, and then me on Tim DeThrasios, and then an Abdel Adrian Candlekeep Sage deck. Abdel ended up mulling to four, which was pretty unfortunate, and had an all mana hand into Adelny, which made me not threatened by Abdel Adrian at all. So I felt like I was playing 1v1 against Blue Farm, and they played an Ottawara into a Soul Ring into a Mana Vault, and then on turn two, Simeon Spirit Guide Krom and missed their land.
Ooh.
Their Mana Vault's tapped. They have three mana then, and I went, oh, I'm just going to snap your Krom. I'm just, you can't do anything else now. This has been the whole game.
Yeah. Especially in a 1v1 situation, that's such an easy choice, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And I have the most busted dual commander deck in the format, I think. Yeah. So I just cast Grand Abolisher and Basalt Monolith, literally pass the turn. No one can do anything. And then I just get to Kinnan and win the game from there.
Did you have naturally, did you tutor for him?
I think I had a tutor for Kinnan, but I had the Basalt Monolith and the Grand Abolisher.
Nice. Okay. So easy win. Start 1-0.
I was the second pod that was done, Brandon told me.
Good start. Yeah. Round two. Should we just go right to round
two? Let's just go right into round two, yeah.
Right to round two. I kept Smothering Tithe, Lotus Petal, Abrupt Decay, and three lands. Again, kind of a three lands, three spells hand, but this one, I maybe should have went to five on this one. This is a six that I kept. I was kind of thinking turn two Thrasios, turn three Smothering Tithe. If I can make it past that, I should be in a good spot, right? I don't know. Yeah. I'm playing against Rogthras, Animar, and Marnius. Animar and Marnius, I'm thinking, are slow-ish decks, and Rogthras can go fast, but against these three other mid-range decks, Rogthras might not try to go fast, right? So I was thinking everyone would try to be slow. Maybe my Smothering Tithe will get there. I'm just going to read what I wrote directly. Yeah. Early Fish from Rog, tried to play around it. Turn three, Smothering Tithe. I got Fierce Guardianship. Animar won before I untapped for turn four.
Ooh, yeah.
Maybe I should have held up Abrupt Decay to hit up a value piece instead of casting Thrasios on turn two. That was my one thought, that something that I could have done differently, because otherwise, I wasn't really given a ton of choices in that game besides maybe I should have mulliganed to five, or maybe I should have held up Abrupt Decay. Animar didn't have anything threatening on the board at that point. I don't know that I should have just, like, in the dark, Abrupt Decay something on Animar's board. Going back, I probably should have just hit a mana dark. That would have been great. But I don't think that's right to do in the dark. Like, I think I'm supposed to not assume Animar's going to win.
It feels such a low value thing when, like, someone else could have an Underworld Breach that, like, you specifically need an uncounterable interactive spell for, as opposed to hitting the door.
And there is a world where I could have convinced the Rogthras player, maybe, like, hey, if you leave my Smothering Tithe alone and don't counter it, I will make sure to use this Abrupt Decay on somebody else that's not you. Maybe I could have made that threat and say, I'll never use this Abrupt Decay on you if you let my Smothering Tithe resolve. I just need the treasure so I can interact with someone. Maybe that was something I could have done too. I didn't really think about that until afterwards. I also should mention the Marnie's player was Tim, who, spoilers, won the event. So that was fun to play against Tim. He also makes a bunch of our playmats and tokens and is a good friend of the channel.
Gold Sabertooth.
That was my round two. It kind of ended from a slow deck winning on their turn three before my turn four, which is basically what I did the very turn prior. I'm a slowish deck that won before I was supposed to.
Is Animar a very slow deck?
Not very slow, but I don't think of them as a turn three deck.
I don't normally think of them as a turn three deck too, but I guess if they can get Animar out on turn two,
Maybe you have to get counters on Animora to do the whole 4-mana bounce creature thing, though, yeah, and make that worthy.
There's 3 blue players, so I was also thinking, like, Animora maybe won't go fast at this particular pod. I didn't keep a bunch of interaction, so I was hoping I would draw it, and the other 2 players maybe were hoping the same thing.
Yeah, I feel like every time I play against Animora, I lose because I have a non-creature counterspell in my hand, and they don't need a non-creature to cast, and that's always been my problem against the deck. And it sucks, just like, even holding up Abrupt Decay wouldn't have helped you either, because Animora has protection from black.
Yeah, exactly. I would have to hit something else, a mana dork or something. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, and even that's not good. That's not good.
I think what I should have done is tried to beg and plead for the Smothering Tide to resolve and say, I need to hold up Abrupt Decay and politic my way. I think that was my best shot. Or, like I said before, maybe mulliganing to 5. Also, one thing I wanted to mention about Animar, this card that I can't remember the name of it. It's a green wizard. It's one of the Lord of the Rings wizards. It says, whenever a creature enters play, look at the top cards of your library equal to the creature's mana value. If you reveal a creature that does not share a creature type with one of the creatures in play, you put it into your hand. It's called Valagaster. I can't remember what it's called.
Faragast?
No, it's one of the green wizards. It's one of the wizards. It's one of the Gandalfs, I think.
Like Faragast or something.
That's not right.
It's not exactly the name, but I know the character you mean, but I can't put art to this card.
The card's on screen right now if you're watching.
Jeez, I hope so. I hope I can find it.
But this card goes nuts. In Animar specifically, when everything is reduced by how much generic mana it costs, and he found a Peregrine Drake and then found a clone for the Peregrine Drake, and you're untapping lands each time, and he really was able to completely go off from a spot that I didn't think he was able to. Even, I remember him saying, I don't think I can win from here.
Oh, that's funny.
And then just like turning into like the craziest shit I've ever seen. So that was cool to see, but unfortunately a loss for me.
Damn.
Round 2 for you.
All right, so I'm round 2. It's Rog'Sai going first, then I'm going second. We have the 4-color Omnath player going third, and then Timna Malcolm going last. This was an incredibly grindy game where everybody had a card advantage engine in play and was drawing 50 cards. See, I got to slam my Smothering Tide down this game.
And yours
game.
Resolved?
Mine resolved. In mine, I had 55 treasures in play at one point. No lie. We were just casting spells. I was feeding 2 cards per spell that I cast to Timna Malcolm. And
where was your Thrasios?
In play. Dude, I didn't want to use it. Like, I just...
Because you would give somebody else something if you got a draw?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm gonna... Well, also, I had, like, every card that I wanted in my hand. I had Born Upon the Wind, I had Thassa's Oracle, and I had Demonic Consultation.
Okay.
All I had to do this game was wait for someone else to win, and then I would win.
Okay.
And if that doesn't happen and we go to time, then I get a draw, right? So every once in a while, the Rog'Sai player who went right before me would go, all right, well, I'm going to try to win. And then he would go to do something, and then the table would stop him. Or, like, I wouldn't do anything because I can win on top of whatever he does. So I'm trying to make the other players use up their interaction instead. So one of the other 2, like Tim the Malcolm, would stop him. And then he goes, okay, I'll pass. And then we go to my turn, and I have 6 extra treasures from what just transpired over that last turn. And I just go, okay, well, I still have an instant speed win in my hand. Maybe I'll run out another, like, mana dork or something.
Yeah.
And then just pass the turn. I'm just waiting this entire time. Because if I do what Rog'Sai is doing, I'm going
to
get stopped.
Same thing's going to happen to you.
And then Omnath is going to win. And like, because all it needs is food chain, and it can just take off from there. And I don't want to throw the game like that. And it just got to a point where by the time the round clock was ticking way down, I was like, okay. And on my turn, I tried to present 15 different tutor opportunities to win, and all of them got stopped. And then time was called, and I went, all right, fellas, I can't win. And we just drew.
Oh, damn. Really, after all that?
After all that, we just drew, which was like, okay, yeah, it kind of sucks, but like, there was never really a time that I felt like I could have just gone for it.
Yeah.
Because there was always someone else that had other further backup. And then still, like, Rog'Sai would go, okay, well, my win got stopped. I still have 17 cards in my hand or whatever.
Because everyone had Rhystic Studies and
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, even though they decided to let their Adnaz get countered, they still clearly had other counter spells in hand because they couldn't just pass the turn and let me win. Like, there was a lot of consideration for what the future of the game was gonna happen if your push does get stopped.
And it almost, it probably felt like it's too risky to go for a win, because if you go for a win, you might get 0 points with a loss. Whereas if you draw, at least you get 1 point.
I've been trying to do that a lot more, is like, just think about what happens if I try to keep protecting my win condition versus just letting my win condition stop, have to find another one, but at least I have a counterspell going into someone else's turn so I don't just give the game away. Like, it ended up working out for the rest of the table that they didn't just suck up a loss and they can still walk away from this pod with a point.
Yeah, the more I play CDH, especially recently, it seems like it's almost not correct to go for a win unless you're 100% sure you're gonna win. Because otherwise, it's just like too risky. Like, if it's a 60% chance you win, but 40% chance you give the game to somebody else, that's still not as good as the odds of if you don't do anything, then there's like an 80% chance you draw, which is better and not a loss.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. All of the, when I said I was tutoring on that last turn, it was all for Grand Abolisher. Like, because I had the other, I had the win in my hand. I just need to find a way to keep it protected.
To make sure that it's protected. One of the reasons why white is so good, but also like, How do you fix that problem? How do you fix that in CDH? What's the solution? How do you avoid that draw?
You just find another, like, silence, right? You got to find silence, find another tutor, right? You just got to do more of that.
So you
got to
draw. So right now you are 101, I'm 1-1.
Correct. Yes, that sounds good. Let's go into round three.
So I wrote down round three, draw, kept Enlightened Tutor, Chrome Mox, Pact of Negation, Fel Warstone, Demonic Consultation, land. Malcolm plays Steel Enchantment on my turn three, Smothering Tithe. I'm playing against Stella, Timnit Malcolm, and Thrasios Clark. I wrote that out of order. Sorry about that. Basically, the end state is Stella ends up forcing... This is Max Stella. Max, who has won a couple of other play-to-win tournaments at Cloud recently.
Yeah,
Max is on Stella this time. what ended up happening was Stella forced a draw by threatening to Hidden Strings Thrasios' lands to give him the win if he doesn't take the draw, so we don't lose to Malcolm, who had 100 cards and draw engines and mana. So Thrasios didn't think that he could beat Malcolm, who was coming before Thrasios, and after Stella offered Thrasios 1,000 mana, Malcolm wouldn't be able to beat Thrasios anymore, so then they're both okay with the draw. Does that make sense? That's hard to understand. So, like, Stella was in front of me here, Malcolm Timnit was over here, diagonally for me, and then Thrasios Quark was next to me here.
Okay, yeah.
The Stella player says to the player, the Malcolm player, we should draw. Malcolm player says, I don't think so, because Stella can't win, and Stella knows that if he passes, Malcolm will win. So Stella says, I'm going to give Thrasios, you player, I'm going to untap all of your lands over and over again with Hidden Strings. You have Thrasios out, you can draw your deck and win.
That's so funny.
I want you to give me the draw, because if you don't give me the draw, I'm not going to do this, and I'm going to let the Malcolm player win. This is all Max saying this. And then to the Malcolm player, he just says, I'm giving Thrasios all of this mana. If you don't accept the draw, they'll just win the game.
Oh, and this works for you because you got Steel Enchantmented.
I'm out of this fucking game. I'm like, great, you took my advantage piece. I'm shit out of luck here. Like, the Steel Enchantment on my Smothering Tithe was like, I had nothing else after that. And I remember there being a situation where I could have Enlightened Tutored for a Wishclaw Talisman, and I might have had enough mana to go for a win because I had Demonic Consultation in my hand. So I would have been able to Enlightened Tutor for a Wishclaw, cast, activate, and Thoracle. I already had like a couple other rocks in play at that point, but I didn't want to go for that because I thought that would be going for a win too early.
Oh.
I'm like, that's stupid. Let me get the Smothering Tithe instead. Let me grind. Let me get the protection for it later, whatever. And then I felt fucking stupid when the Steel Enchantment stole it right away. I'm like,
that's never happened to you, though. Like, what else are you supposed to do?
Exactly. So basically, all those three players took the draw, and I said, I'm going to take the draw because no matter what, I'm not winning this game, right? It's going to be one of you two. It's going to be the Clark Thrasios player or the Malcolm player because they both had already at this point drawn a ton of cards. They were way ahead on advantage. So we all worked out that we all just decided to take a draw, which is kind of another thing that I wanted to talk about with Tournament CDH is that it gets into this situation where one player can present to win, another player says, I could stop your win. If I stop the win, I think we'll lose to the player after you. So the whole table, I would like to offer a draw. And if you don't accept the draw, I'm going to let this player win the game. For years in CDH, that would just be a king making. It would be spite playing. We wouldn't do that. But when tournaments are on the line, that's not a rule anymore. You're allowed to threaten that as like to offer a draw, which is like strategically advantageous because getting a draw is 1 point and getting a loss is 0 points. And a draw is better than a loss.
And getting a win is 5 points, and to be clear, just so that we can, you know, set up this structure, right? So like, it's obviously advantageous for people to want to play for the win, but we're here to play to win the tournament. And sometimes getting 1 point is going to help push you over those that just straight up lost the round.
Yeah.
And if it's going to put you higher in the standings, that's what you have to play towards.
And the reason why I think this is particularly noticeable in Commander versus 60, like 1v1 formats, I think, I'm not sure, is that We don't play the same amount of rounds that the 1v1 players play for heavy amount of pods in the player. Does that make sense? The 1v1 formats, you can't just draw all the way up because you won't have enough points. The players who wins will get enough points.
There's also not a situation where you can hold the rest of the table hostage because a third player is coming in and trying to win the game. Like, that will never happen in Modern or Legacy.
Yeah, the situation, even for a different way, it never comes up where, like, I will force a draw right now if you don't
I guess that's
draw.
True.
Like animate Dead Loop or whatever. Or you know,
like,
what I mean?
Yeah, like, I have a second Oblivion Ring. I'm going to make them go back and forth forever.
That doesn't come up at all. Whereas in Commander, weird shit like that, it can come up with four players easily. You know what I mean? You can threaten to give the player to someone else.
Yeah.
I don't know how to fix that. I don't know what the fix is. I don't know if that's something that needs to be fixed.
The only fix is that you just can't talk. Yeah. Like, that's the only fix.
We talked about this the whole week, and it's just, like, don't talk. Just, like, you shouldn't be allowed,
oh,
honestly.
No, you really shouldn't. We were joking, like, we should have shock collars, and judges should shock people when they say something that isn't an interaction or a clarifying question.
And it's interesting because, like, at this point, talking has become so much a part of CDH. That's the game, is, like, politicking and getting your opponents to do things for you and agree for things, and, like, that's how you win tournaments in CDH. I firmly believe that is, like, skill only gets you so far. You can't fuck up, but you also have to convince your opponents to do some things that are not favorable for them.
And as an opponent, which you are to 75% of the table, shit, where was I going with this?
Oh, I had a great line.
As an opponent to 75% of the table?
No, but what did you say? You said something that made me think about
how dare
this.
You ask me what I just said?
Right.
I'm blacked out right now.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Something that we often think about and talk about is, like, what if draws just gave you no points? What if that was the fix? Is you don't get any points for draws. A loss is just 0 points and a win is 5 points. But the issue then is there's still an opportunity for a draw, and that means everyone gets 0 points, which means no one comes out with 5 points. And that's still a better situation than someone coming out with 5 points for the tournament, right? Because if you can choose to either get 0 points and your opponent gets 0 points, or get 0 points and your opponent gets 5 points, it's better for everyone to get 0 points.
Yeah, I guess depending on where you at, like, maybe that's not the case if you are, like, seed number two in the fifth pot in, like, round five, and you're about to, like, lose or something like that.
Right.
But in 99% of circumstances, I think that's right, where, like, it doesn't actually fix anything that happens, because you still care about your standings overall and making sure that no other players are progressing over you.
Yeah, and the only real, there's no real good fix that I can think of, but, like, another fix would be just, like, what if you're just not allowed to draw? And that means that all the rounds can go as long as they need to take, which would be a miserable experience, because then a lot of them could go 2, 3, 4 hours.
Maybe it's just you're not allowed to offer the draw, and the only draws that are allowed to happen is through time. Like, I think I would be more on board with that, I think. Because then that still gives you, like, that still enforces a time limit to make sure that, like, we're not there until midnight and the convention center closes.
And that also goes back to, like, the should you be allowed to talk in tournaments. What if you just removed all of that? What if you were only allowed to say the names of your spells and actions as you play and cast them? You were able to ask clarifying questions, but outside of that, you couldn't talk. One, I think a lot of people would be unhappy with that, because talking is the fun. It would be very, you know, much more, the tournaments would be much more serious in that way. That's how, like, chess is. This is the comparison that I was making. It's like chess tournaments, you can't talk to your opponent at all. You can't distract them in any way. You can't, like, make noises. It's all got to be in your brain. It's all about who knows the game of chess better. And CDH Magic tournaments are not that. It's not who knows the game better. It's who can win the game. It's not who knows the game better. It's who can win the game. It's a little bit of a different question.
It's a collaborative thing when you have four players that are all trying to reach the same goal, but kind of separately.
But I would be interested in, like, what a tournament like that would look like. What if you weren't allowed to talk for one tournament? What would that change? Would there be less draws? Would it be a more fun experience? Would everyone fucking hate it and be boring? I don't know.
I feel like giving you a turn clock, like a chess clock for your turn, in addition to a round clock, would also disincentivize that, because you don't want to be the person with priority taking up a bunch of time trying to talk and ask a bunch of questions. It's just like, no, you got to take your turn. Otherwise, you're going to be auto-passing for the rest of the game.
And that would be kind of cool. The buzzer would be a little bit difficult. Some people might have a hard time hitting the buzzer, number one. And number two, untap, upkeep, draw, everyone gets priority at the beginning and end of all of those phases. So at the beginning of every turn, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, from all the players around the thing. And, like, the end of turn, like, you have to pass a couple times through main phase, through end step, through cleanup. Like, I don't know what you do to fix that.
Yeah.
You know mean,
you have to set it up like Arena or Magic Online, and now we have to have electronic interfaces at every single pod so that every player can like be showcasing their own things to the clock. And like, this is once we have a, you know, 6 or 7 digit budget for CEDH tournaments,
this will be awesome to implement, dude.
But for now, we're gonna have some draws.
Yeah, it's fine.
Should we talk about where are we at? I need to talk about my round three. Let's get to your round three.
Yeah, so this was Temeshi versus me versus Doretti, and then Marnius, also Tim.
Nice.
Yeah, actually. And Tim won this game because we got pretty scared of Doretti because Doretti had a Cutsel in play.
You mean Derevi?
What am I saying?
Doretti, which is the mono red planeswalker.
I'm talking about the Bant bird.
Yeah, Derevi.
Derevi?
Yes, I understand now.
I do this every single time.
Why did they do this? Why did they do that?
Right?
Like, that's a fuck. That's a fuck up.
It's a big fuck up. Here, give me 2 seconds.
I have to emotionally get over this.
Yeah, I need to calm myself down. Okay. We were pretty afraid of this Cutsel, that Derevi.
No.
Derevi. Fuck.
I think, I hope I'm right. I hope I'm not.
I don't know. I typed in Derevi, so.
I'm pretty sure the bird has a V.
Well.
Flying V, like goose.
The one can't play Cutsel, so the one that can play Cutsel.
That's the one we're talking about. We're talking about the Bant bird.
Yeah, the Bant bird had a Cutsel in play and didn't really have too much else going on, but like we were all kind of afraid of that Cutsel though, because the second that he does draw something, then all of a sudden he can just win the game and there's nothing that we can do. So like we're trying to actively deal with this, and Tim shows me an Amphibian Downpour in his hand, which is like super freaking sweet. So between like the three of us, we're like, well, we need to build up Storm so that we can just Amphibian Downpour a bunch of Derevi's board. And then that way we just don't have to worry about Derevi.
The Storm card that you're talking about puts an enchantment on all of the creatures that would basically turn them off, turn them into 0/1s.
Zero twos, I think they end up being.
And they stay, that enchantment stays on them forever.
Yeah, exactly. It's an aura that will stay on them.
It's not a dress down. It's a forever.
Correct. Yeah. So we end up building the Storm count to 4, and I tap out to cast, I have a Valley Flood Caller, so I can tap out to cast an instant speed Demonic Tutor, because I don't think Tim can win here, and I think that's my first problem, is I don't think that Tim can win going into his turn.
What did you tutor for, do you remember?
For Thassa's Oracle, because I'm going to try to win on my turn. I have so many resources. I had this Valley Flood Caller. I felt pretty good that I was still going to be able to get somewhere on my turn, and it turns out that Tim had the confidence of me tapping out, where we didn't actually need me to tap out for the Storm count on Amphibian Downpour to be enough to stop Derevi from being able to win on a future turn, which is really what we were trying to do.
Because
Derevi had, we were trying to hit the Derevi and a Roaming Throne as well as a Cutsel, so that that way we could just like basically stop him in his tracks. But we ended up getting the Storm count high enough then that my Valley Flood Caller was also an appealing target, which then also kind of made me go, oh, I really didn't need to tap out. I could have left up some interaction.
So Tim turned your Valley Flood Caller into a thing.
Yeah, he set up a really good scenario where we got really afraid of one player, and then I mistakenly thought that he couldn't win from where he was at. He's on Marnius, right? He's not on Playgot anymore.
Yeah.
He can play Demonic Consultation. Yeah. And that's his Oracle. So he ends up doing that. And it went very well for him. So nice job, Tim.
That's a tough spot to be in, because you kind of feel like you need to stop the one player from winning the game, and then the other player who helped you stop that one player now has the win.
I mean, there's a good chance that he still would have had like a bunch of interaction to also help like protect his win as a backup. He had an Esper Sentinel of his own, and then he Gilded Draked the Derevi player's Esper Sentinel like really early on in the game. So there was a couple cards that he drew. But yeah, so I'm now 1-1-1. I think this is a good time to mention now that the way that Prototype worked is that we did a top 13 instead of a top 16, which meant that the number one seed after Swiss goes immediately to the finals. So there's only 3 pods that are playing in the semifinals round.
Right. Yep. I'm also at this point 1-1-1.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Round four. Should I go first or do you want to this time?
Let's do it at the same time.
Okay. We played each other.
Oh, yeah. The pod was Thrasios Timna, me, Thrasios Timna, and then Winota.
And then you, I have Dylan. I wrote Dylan. What deck were you playing?
Thrasios Dimna.
Oh, right. Okay. And then Kinnan, that went fourth.
I wrote down round four, kept Sol Ring, Fetch, Emergence Zone, Rhystic Study, Vampire Tutor, Opposition Agent.
Can we talk about the hand that I kept?
Yeah, let's do it.
It was Polluted Delta, Rhystic Study.
Oh, yeah. You mulliganed to two this game.
I mulliganed to two. Yeah.
Yeah,
I kept,
fuck.
I was like, oh, man. At turn two, Orcish Bowmaster in my first seven feels really bad. I don't want to keep this. I'll find something better. And I did not.
Yeah. I had turn one Sol Ring, turn two Rhystic Study, and just was grinding the game for a while. That was kind of my plan as you were trying to hit your second land drop for most of the game.
Honestly, most people were trying to hit their second or third land drop this game because we were taking turns extremely quickly, and I got a bunch of draws to find Lotus Petal eventually, and then eventually also find Lothar, which really helped me start to churn out mana.
Yeah, I remember, I think the Winota player was like stuck on only one color of mana and had to like crack a Lotus Petal or something for the Winota, and did I counter the Winota?
You or Kinnan countered the Winota.
I think maybe Kinnan. I don't remember. This is what I wrote down. I cast Opposition Agent. Kinnan clones it. I tried to bounce the Opposition Agent. It doesn't work. I tried to bounce again. It does work. I go for what I thought was a protected win. Cam has a counter, but doesn't want to use it because he knows Kinnan will win because Kinnan basically like implied and then showed that has the win. So Cam offered a draw and we all took it, basically.
Which was wild, yeah. And the Winota player did not want to draw at all, which kind of makes sense. Like, they were still in a pretty good position if they could get Winota, you know, back. But at that point, you know, I had Rhystic Study, I had a bunch of mana with Lotho, and I showed Demonic Consultation and Demonic Tutor and a bunch of mana in play. And I said, look, I can go for a win before you're going to get a turn, Winota, and I know that you have nothing in your hand that you can do about this. And then the Kinnan player also showed Basalt Monolith and go, oh, I can also win the game before we got there. And you had Thassa's Oracle and Demonic Consultation on the stack.
Right, and I thought I had one piece of interaction for it, and I for some reason like thought that would be enough at that point. I probably should have just waited. I remember one of the things I had was a Court of Calling, and maybe I should have just waited and used the Court of Calling to try to set something up later rather than just try to jam early. Maybe that was, I think, my big mistake. I was thinking, if I pass here, all these players who just drew 15 cards are going to untap with all their mana. And right now, they don't have untapped mana. So maybe I can win here. But if they untap with all their mana, they're going to have all this counter magic, and I'm not going to be able to do anything about that.
Like, that was the last chance that you had to try to get a clean opportunity.
Right,
yeah.
But maybe... So I thought it was a window, and it clearly wasn't. You had a Mystical Tutor in response to your last Rhystic Study draw that I couldn't pay for. When I paid for another one, maybe I should have, like, thought about something like that and like waited to pay for the last one or something like that. But yeah, you showed me the mental misstep. And then once you showed me the mental misstep and told me that you don't want to do it because you want to offer a draw because I know that the Kinnan player can win, I was like, at this point, yeah, because if you mental misstep me here, oh, we're going to lose to Kinnan. So if you don't do that, we'll just take the draw. And we all decided that it was in the best interest of all of us to draw.
I can't believe that. Mauled to two ended up still getting me a point. I thought I was completely out of that game.
And that's just kind of, a lot of games seem like they're easily pushed into a situation like that, where player A is trying to go for a win. Player C says, I could stop you, but if I stop you, I think player B will win the game. Not only think, I know that will happen. So to the rest of the table, I'm not going to stop them unless you take the draw. So, like, the exact same thing that I talked about earlier was the exact same thing that played out here. And I think that's, like, a common thing that plays out. And, again, I don't know the fix, but I remember thinking, this feels broken.
I
remember thinking I should lose this game right now because you should counter this and Kinnan should win. But that's because we're playing for draws. It's not like that.
It kind of feels good for all of us that at least we get to still come away with a point.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there is a fix.
Like, yeah, I don't even know if there needs to be one.
I agree. Like, I think this is just, like, part of what happens when you play a Magic format like this. When you have a four-player free-for-all where you kind of, like, can collude in these situations to, like, force an advantageous scenario for you. Like, this is just part of what competitive EDH is like.
Right.
Period. And that's what it is.
And maybe that just means that it shouldn't be for money, these tournaments. Because what you just said right there, like, it's just easy to collude with your opponents because it's easier to say we all get a point or someone will get five or zero. And, like, you and I know each other. You know what I mean? Like,
we sat down even before the game started, and knowing that I knew you, I said to the pod, do you want to draw? Like, I was joking, and then I mulled to two, and I kept joking about drawing with the entire pod the entire game.
Because so it's like, just more advantageous than a loss. So yeah, I don't know. Right now, you can make in-deals games that are just better for you in the tournament, and we're playing to win the tournament. So for now, that's the game. The game is playing the tournament, so I don't really think of it as colluding. It's just deals you're allowed to make in-game.
That's just how it is. Yeah. Our records going into tournaments are going to look a little bit weird until we have like more two-day tournaments that let us play 10 rounds of Swiss before we go into a top 16.
And
or
I think that's what we would really need is just like more rounds, and maybe you would have to replay some people again throughout the tournament or something, so that you have to go deeper, so that wins would be much more advantageous.
Yeah.
Because right now, when you look at a top 13, and there's like two people with three wins, and everyone's got two wins and draws after that. I don't know if it was exactly that, but it feels like the best player has a 50% win record, which like in CDH, like that is a good record in CDH. Maybe we just got to get used to that, but it feels a little bit like, how do you know what's good when like the best decks are just have like a bunch of draws?
That's true though. Yeah. Cause like when you take what your average 1v1 win record should be, which I guess should be about 50% of the time, right? And then you go to a pro tour and then you end up doing like 76%, right? Like
that's really good.
That's why, right? Even 64% win rate, you know, that's still really good. And it's the same thing where in CEDH, it's a 25% win rate that you normally have. So if you end up having 50% win rate,
it's actually good.
That's a 50% increase that you have then, right? So, or 100% increase, I guess. Whatever. I don't know how to do math.
It's made up.
I'm embarrassing myself. Let me
Again, I said this twice already. I'm not even sure that it is a problem. It's just something notable in tournaments. CDH, when you're playing with your friends for fun at the local game store or in someone's basement or whatever, you're playing to win that specific game. You just play until that game wins, because why would you accept a draw? You know what I mean? In a situation like that, you're trying to figure out how to win. And tournaments, they're different. There's time situations. You have to win within the timing. Like, the draws are worth points. So it's just what tournament CDH is like, and it makes it a little bit different than CDH.
Yeah, exactly. Are we driving a bigger bar in between TEDH and CEDH?
I don't know, but I do think that there's a world where it might make sense to build a little bit differently for each. I think Steel Enchantment makes a lot more sense in TEDH than it does in just regular CEDH.
You know, a couple weeks ago, we talked about Glasses of Urza. Just information and stuff like that is something that's more popular too. Because
Telepathy might be a little bit better.
Yeah, that one might be a little bit of a better card. But like just information, especially as the social aspect of the format becomes more and more important in these tournament settings. Like, that's a card that I would only want to bring to a tournament and not want to play over webcam.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Should we talk about round five?
Round five. Yeah. So we're both 1-1-2 going into the last round. We need wins to top 13.
We both need a win to top 13 here. Yeah. So round five, I kept two lands, Fellwar Stone, Abrupt Decay, Bloom Tender, Rhystic Study against Magda, Omnath, and Mizzix. It was Magda, then me, then Omnath, then Mizzix. It's a slow hand. It's another slow one. It's two lands only, nothing to do until turn two, and then I have a turn three Rhystic. And I kind of have the same mind of like, if I can stay alive until turn three or four, this Rhystic plus removal plus Bloom Tender, I should be good. I should be good to go. Oh, there was an issue with my lands, though. I don't know that it matters, because I remember playing Thrasios on turn two, not Bloom Tender, and right now I'm thinking that doesn't make any sense, but that's not important to the story. Here's what Magda played on the play first up right away. First up, she played Urza Saga, Lotus Petal, Unlicensed Hearst, one of the vehicles that you can tap to exile something from someone's graveyard
this
or something.
This is an insane Magda start. I love
great
this.
Great start. Turn two, Urza Saga ticks up, Caverner Souls name Dwarf, cast Magda on turn two. An excellent start again. I think she probably end steps, exiles someone's thing again for the second time, a fetch land, makes a treasure. Untaps on turn three. This is right now where I have played a Thrasios. I don't know why I didn't play a Bloom Tender. That part doesn't matter. I tapped out instead of holding Abrupt Decay up, something that I did wrong. I played the Fellwar Stone, not the Thrasios. That's what I did. Because I remember thinking, I should have Nature's Claim in my deck, not Abrupt Decay, because 2 mana is 1,000 and 1 mana is so cheap.
You brought that up to me later. Yeah, I remember
so
now.
So Magda untaps, Urza Saga ticks up, goes find Sol Ring. Land plays the Derev V card that you mentioned earlier, the 4 mana name a type, and it triggers twice.
Oh, Roaming Throne.
Roaming Throne. Turn three, Roaming Throne. The dwarf out, with the Magda out and the vehicle out already. Which means that since she already has one treasure, she taps the Magda to crew the vehicle, two more treasures, taps the Roaming Throne to crew the vehicle. That's 5 treasures. On turn three, she says, all right, I'll go search. And we all go, I say, someone should do something soon, right? Pass. Everyone passes. She goes and finds Clock of Omens. It's enough right there to, I don't know what.
She gets to tap the Hearst and the Clock to untap the Roaming Throne.
That's what it is. Make tap for 2 treasures or something.
And then that way she can now has the untapped Roaming Throne and go from there. The Hearst was especially helpful there.
Yeah, so she makes infinite tap treasures. She goes and finds the tree. What's the tree called? That makes everything.
The Maskwood Nexus.
Maskwood Nexus. Goes find Zorn. Goes find infinite untapped treasures. goes and finds the one that everything costs two more, just in case the Urza's. I can't remember any fucking cards.
Statue.
God Pharaoh statue. Thank you for being able to pull all these up. Fucking Magda cards. And then shows us the line of, I don't even remember, maybe one of the dragons with the activated ability or something like that. Whatever way it was to win the game, she like, hey, I'm going to put all my artifacts in play and then win with some way. And we were just dead on turn three very easily. And I was like, damn, this is how the tournament ends. Another one of like, I kept a hand that was too slow against a deck Magda that I thought wasn't going to win early, because normally Magda has no reason to jam on turn three, but she was on the play. Everyone tapped out. No one was doing anything. Maybe I talked a little bit too much, because I was like, if anyone has anything, you should do it here. And they were all like, nope, I don't have anything. Nope, I don't have anything. And she's like, great, in that case, I'll go for it. And I'm like, do you normally go for wins this early? And she was like, normally I don't know that no one has anything on turn three. Normally they keep interaction
so
up.
Funny.
And I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest lesson that I learned, is that the decks that you think are slow in CDH, even me, right now, slow in CDH is still a turn three win attempt. Even the slow decks can do that.
Yeah.
I did that as what I think is a slowish deck to Mithrasios. Maybe I don't know what Animar is. Maybe your Animar is a turn three deck. I think it's a turn four or five deck. So, but even those slow-ish decks, Magda, that normally can win whenever, they can still win on turn three. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. And my tournament is smashed at this point. We're
closes
done.
The door. You're 1-2-2?
1-2-2 is the final record. Yeah. Take me through your final round.
All right. So it's Oscar, and then Temeshi, and then Stella Lee, and then me on Thrasios Temna.
3 2-color blue decks.
But I'm going last, and I look at my first seven, and it has 5 lands. One of them's Gaia's Cradle and Mystic Remora. And I just came from that pod where I mulled the two, and I said, fuck it.
I also remember your hand had a removal spell in it, too, you mentioned.
Oh, I think it was, it might have even been Retraction Helix that I had.
I think it was the Exile. It was free if you cast your commander.
Oh, did I keep a
Deadly
hand
Relic.
That had Deadly Relic
I think
it
was
it.
Deadly
okay,
Relic,
yeah.
Because I remember you mentioning to me, like, against, like, Stella, against these, like, very commander-centric ones, having the Deadly Relic felt, like, way better there than normal.
That's the thing about these two-color commanders, is that they all need their commanders to win the game or do their lines, and they all can't win by their turn three. So that gives me the chance to play Thrasios on my turn two if I draw another way to like even keep my fish around. We got to a point where Max on Stella Lee has the Skirk Prospector in play. And that's the only creature that's in play that's not on Oscar's board, which, by the way, Oscar deck popped off pretty quickly because played out a bunch of mana really quick and then went for a really quick, like, Thassa's Oracle win. We were mad that we couldn't interact with it because there was a Vexing Bauble in play on Oscar's side. So, like, it was working as the perfect thing to make sure that my two other blue opponents couldn't stop Oscar. But I have the, what's the card that I said before? Retraction Helix in my hand. That's why I brought that up earlier, so that I can use it on Max Skirk Prospector to convince him to bounce the Vexing Bauble so that we don't lose this turn.
Okay.
And now this is my window. As long as Temeshi just taps out for Temeshi, and then that's when I use Deadly Relic then.
Okay.
Because I was able to get Thrasios out at one point, use Deadly Relic on the Stella Lee so that Max just like can't win on his turn.
Yeah.
He ends up gambling for fish and has to discard fish to his gamble on his turn. And then I untap in because I drew so many cards from my fish that game. I drew so many cards, I could just devote a druid, machine god's effigy, and just win the game from right there. Yeah.
That's great. I mean, it seems like that's the ticket to the success, is have 55 treasures from Smothering Tithe, or have a whole bunch of draws from Mystic Remora, or go way ahead on one of those engines.
Or
right?
Just only play against two opponents, too. That's how you top 13 a CEDH tournament.
So you're 2-1-2, which gets you in top 13.
Correct. Yeah. I have 12 points, gets me into top 13.
Should we talk quick about what the top 13 was? Like the whole top 13 of the tournament?
That's a good idea. Yeah. So there was a Rograk Silas deck. The same Rograk Silas deck that I played in round two when I drew. A Malcolm Timna deck that's here.
Yep.
A Krark Sakashima deck that made it. A Diada, which was in my pod. A Narset Enlightened Exile.
The new one.
The new one. Yeah, the 4-mana one. I didn't hear about this deck all day, unfortunately. Chatterfang, which was also in my pod, which was super cool to see. Blue-White Heliod, Wheeliod, also top 16. Derevi, the Derevi player that I also played against earlier, too. Nice going, Ryan. There was a Kedis Malcolm player that also top 13.
Okay.
Then we have, in the top 4, spoilers alert, I did not make it here. Did I even say my Thrasios Timna deck? Did I skip
over
that?
You didn't say it, but yeah, implied, yeah.
Yeah, I was in there. Yeah, the top 4 pod ended up being Marnius, Animar, Oswald, and Marnius, hysterically.
Yes, that's the Animar player that I lost to. And then the Marnius player is Tim, who was your only two losses on the whole day.
Yeah, so
in the Swiss and in your top four, in your final pod.
Yeah, and in my final pod. The last game was pretty grindy. I didn't take notes on it. I know that Tim was offering deals that my other opponents took. I remember
one or two of them, because I remember you telling me, and I was watching this
game.
Yeah,
I know one of them was Tim had stolen a Orcish Bowmaster out of someone's graveyard with a reanimate, out of the Chatterfang player's graveyard with a reanimate. And Chatterfang could sacrifice some squirrels to kill the Orcish Bowmaster, but I know that that was one of the deals that Tim made, was that if he didn't kill the Orcish Bowmaster, he would be able to focus it down on me. And my argument was, you can't beat an Orcish Bowmaster token that gets that big. You will die back, but in the time, it wasn't going to do that. So it's one of those moments where you get a little bit of a window for something, but ultimately it ends up giving the other player like so much more advantage.
Yeah, that was the one that I was going to say. Basically, yeah, Tim, I think, did a great job this whole game of kind of like doing things like that, politicking to keep his things around and put himself into situations. Sometimes there was a little bit of luck, but other times he was just able to put himself in situations where he's got all engines in play, but he can prove to you that he's got nothing going on because his hand is shit. And his hand is shit. He'll show you. It's just
which
lands.
Was like also frustrating to me. I was like, man, I actually wish you had good cards instead of four lands in your hand.
Right, but all he's got is engines. So I remember once the Diada player puts a wheel in the stack trying to win the game, everyone wheels, and then now everyone has an interaction for Diada player, and Tim then had a new hand full of grip, and all of his engines were still in play. So he was able to come out on top. Basically after, like, just like submission. I remember he just, like, he had situations where he could have went for a win, but because Marnius was out and someone had a Forbidden Orchard, they had the ability to give him a spirit token, and Marnius's trigger is a must. So if Thoracle is on the stack after an exiled library and someone gives him a token, he'll have to force draw and lose a game. So he had just no reason to go for a win. It was just like, why would I go for a win when I can just not die until my opponents are dead? And it was a great strategy for him.
It really was. Yeah, it worked out very well for him, I think. I kind of threw in the towel a little bit early, I knew, because I was all tapped out. I had no free interaction in my hand. I made it clear I was F6 asking for my packs to go home. I was very tired at that point.
Now. Yeah. There's a certain point when you know the corner is turned. It's like a control deck. They have all the resources. You've lost the game. It's just going to take them a couple turns to actually kill you, but you know you're dead.
And like, even if I do get to untap, there's no way that any of my spells are resolving. Tim drew half of his deck and still has tons of mana untapped because he didn't need to use all of his resources on his turn.
Yeah, I think one thing that was ended up being really good for, he had Ocelot Pride and the Warren, the new zombie that you can sacrifice a creature to make a treasure and lose a life.
Oh, yeah. Warren Instigator.
Yeah. So he's able to like sack a bunch of creatures to make like seven treasures. And then he cloned his Ocelot Pride and he had the blessing and gained life at some point. So when he went to his end step, he had two Ocelots Pride, each make seven treasures. So like he just had like all these like crazy synergies that was getting way out of hand with his commander doing all the token stuff. It was kind of cool to see.
Really cool to see two Marniuses actually make the top 16 or actually make the top four pod even. Yeah. I think that deck is really something. It just keeps getting more cards that are really good. Like Amphibian Downpour is the card that I mentioned earlier. It's Storm on auras, and all of those auras that you make are token copies.
They're permanents. They stay in play.
And they all enter one at a time because they're Storm copies that all have to resolve one at a time. So each one would get you a Marnius draw too.
Oh, wow. That's so good.
It's wild how good Marnius has gotten, I think.
Yeah. I know a little bit about the finals. The only thing that I know is that one of the Marnius players that wasn't Tim put a Tivit into play, and Tim at the end of the game was able to clone the Tivit and then drew Time Sieve off the top.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, like Grand Abolisher in play or something, and was able to win that way. So like that's pretty nuts when you're able to do that. I know that Oswald had a very explosive start, but besides that, it just seems like Marnius is maybe really good at grinding right now.
I mean, you're in a great color combination that allows you to keep grinding, and you have a big beater in the command zone that helps you show these massive boards while also being able to protect yourself from everything that's going on at the table too.
Yeah, things I'm going to be looking for in tournament CDH decks going forward. One, the ability to win at instant speed. I think it's so, so important. If someone offers a draw, you say in response to your offering of the draw, I'm going to try to win right on the stack right now. I think that's going to be an important thing to do. Two, the ability to like demand the draw almost. Like Stella having the strange ability to hidden strings a Thrasios player to untap their lands forever and have the Thrasios player be able to draw the game. You have like just another weird way to like force a draw if you need it. And that's kind of interesting to me. So I'm kind of going to be looking for that as well going forward. And then just like uninteractability. That's what I want the most. I want as many channel effects that actually make sense. I want to play Hashatan, the new Esper zombie.
I was
going
to say, are you going to play that line? I actually just made a short today about that line.
Did you?
And the should. I actually think it turned out okay.
Check it out. What are you talking about? The leveler or
the leveler line? With you can do at instant speed with a split second spell on the stack.
Oh yeah, that's really good too. Do you want to say it real quick?
Sure. So the way that it works, you need to have a lot. You need to have a split second spell. I like Angel's Grace because it's like just the best one mana split second spell that does the most. LED has to be in play. You need leveler in your hand. You need Thassa's Oracle in your hand, and you need 4 mana in order to be able to do this. When you cast Angel's Grace, it has split second, which specifically says that players can't cast spells or activate abilities while it's on the stack unless they're mana abilities, which LED happens to be a mana ability.
And Hashton's ability is a triggered ability. It's not, it has a mana cost, but it's not a cost. It's a triggered ability that you pay. It's not an activated ability.
Exactly, yeah. So when the trigger happens to you cracking your Lion's Eye Diamond and discarding Thassa's Oracle and Leveler at the same time, there are 2 Hashatan triggers, and you can stack them so that the one for the leveler resolves first, and you can pay for this even though you have the Angel's Grace on the stack because it's a triggered ability.
So with your 4 mana, you cast the Angel's Grace, you sacrifice the Lion's Eye Diamond, you have 3 mana left over and the Lion's Eye Diamond here, and then with the Hashatan triggers, when you are discarding your leveler and Thassa's Oracle, pay with your 3 mana and the Lion's Eye Diamond mana, let's put them both into play.
They're both, again, triggered abilities, so they will both still happen while your opponents can't counter you. They can't auto war you, just like in case something with your devotion might happen. If you have Esper Sentinel in play, they can't force you to draw a card too, which I think is also really good.
The issue with this is, one, this is a 4-card combo.
Not even including also needing your commander
your
to
commander
do this
play.
Too. Yeah.
2, leveler stinks. It's a bad card.
You have to have that card in your deck. Yeah.
Angel's Grace, I feel, is a trap. It looks good. It looks like it does some things. Oftentimes it doesn't. It can be good if you can weave it as part of a combo. I can understand. If you're low colors, I can understand.
But if
I don't
you're
love
playing
it.
More split second spells in your deck for more opportunities for this to come up, you're also lowering the quality of your deck every time that you do that too. So like, will you win games with this? Yes. Do I personally think it's good? No.
Yeah.
But it's something that I would be looking for in a tournament deck because right now it's so important to make sure that no one can do shit when you're trying to win the game.
Yeah. So my Hashatan list, I am not playing the Leveler or the Angel's Grace, but I am playing obviously Thassa's Oracle and Lion's Eye Diamond because Lion's Eye Diamond is good in the deck. I wonder if I should play those cards too. I don't think you need it. I think Hashatan already has the ability to uncounterably put in a Ranger Captain of Eos or a Grand Abolisher or the Thassa's Oracle itself. And then you just have to cast the Demonic Consultation. Maybe there's a world. I did purchase 2 levelers. I did the old border and the original. Just in case.
Nice,
I'm not sure. It feels like I don't want it in the deck.
That's really my only problem.
But it feels
the
so uninteractable.
Thing.
That's
so
good. But you need a ton of mana and very specific cards.
Even like trying to do that at instant speed with like Grand Abolisher stuff, because you still give your opponents the window to interact with Grand Abolisher before your turn. So like you can, it works best with Ranger
with
Captain
Ranger
of
Captain.
Eos when
exactly.
You get priority again. Or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure where Hashatan will end up, but I do think Hashatan will be powerful in tournaments because with the leveler shit or not, it's just a difficult to interact with deck. Even the other stuff, even the during your end step on or in response to a counterspell, I'm going to discard this Thoracle, put it into play, and cast Demonic Consultation, win over top of it. That's going to be very simple to do. Just that is going to be very easy, I think. So the ways that you can make that even more difficult to interact with, like what you said, or backing up with 100 counterspells, I think Hashatan is going to... I think it's going to be a real deck.
It's in that good space that you want to be. It's a cheap commander. That like keeps your Fierce Guardianship like as something you can actively do.
Exactly.
So, it's well and above everything else that Aether Drift has.
Yes. Yeah. I'm very excited to see where that one will end up for sure. Any other thoughts on tournament CDH?
Just don't listen to your opponents.
Don't
That's the only
to your
thing
opponents.
That I can say.
Hear your opponents, but don't listen to them.
Yeah. When they tell you that no one in the table has interaction, listen to them.
Right. Yeah.
But don't
act on deals that your opponents would give you. I think that's the best advice that I could say.
Yeah, keep in mind, judges say this at the start of 60-card tournaments, and I don't think they say this enough and loudly enough at Commander tournaments, but your opponents do not have your best interest in mind. They want to win the tournament, so if they're offering you a deal, it's not in your best interest. Sometimes you must begrudgingly do it because you are dead on the stack, and then you should think about actions maybe you should have taken two turns earlier instead.
The only deal that you can make is you can accept the draw that they're offering you're going to lose the game.
You can hear them, and if it's advantageous for you, take it, but you don't have to listen to them always.
If they're offering the deal, it's probably not advantageous for you. I think that's just like a good rule of thumb.
Yeah.
I would never offer someone a deal that would set me behind in a CEDH game.
Your opponent is never going to offer you a draw in a game that they think that they can win. They think that they cannot win the game, and a draw is their best option. So if someone's offering you a draw, just keep that in mind. If you think that you can win, don't take the draw.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So
thanks so much for watching. If you want to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Pat Fires, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groompy, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Luke Cook, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles Go to 9, Quaje Hemi, Lauren Connell, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
You can follow us on social media for more content.
And don't forget, you can pick up the Finn shirts at our Bonfire store, too.
Cute. Thanks for watching.
See you next time.
We're listening.
Ghost Stories, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
If I don't win, my dad's going to beat me.
Welcome to the Play to Win Pod. No,
what?
You say that.
This right is away three wrong. Weeks in a row that we're stealing each other's lines.
Oh, wow, that's so funny. It's like subconscious, too.